mental health and hunger challenges on our planet. Is there a way of satiating everyone's physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual hungers, and do it in a way that creates peace and harmony in our world? After over a decade of experiential research in the field of alternate nourishment, utilizing qi or prana, also known as universal life force or cosmic particles, Australian author and lecturer Jas Muheen travels tirelessly, working from political levels to Eastern Bloc and Third World countries to offer solutions for global harmony. Mother of eight, grandmother, author of 24 books on metaphysics, visionary and artist, Jas has recalibrated her auric field, which is now maintained solely through pranic nourishment. Some saints and sages have done this before, but now the time has come when everyone can taught how to do this for themselves. So without any further ado, I would love to welcome to Otherwhere and bbsradio.com, Jas Muheen. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. It's wonderful to be with you, Liz.
It's wonderful to have you with us. I'm so excited about what we're going to be covering during our conversation because I'm just so fascinated with what you do. And I just feel so strongly that you are a real shining light, and especially, you know, because you're a fellow Australian, and I've been doing a series on fellow Australians that make me feel proud to be Australian. I'm just so excited to help present your work to our audience and find out a little more deeply, you know, how it's changed your whole life and now how it's changing the lives of others.
Yeah, it's a fascinating journey, one of my favourite topics. But then, you know, anything that is beneficial for human evolution is one of my favourite topics.
You call yourself an ambassador for peace.
Yeah, that's my main focus, really.
And tell me how your work relates to peacemaking.
Well, basically, I think everybody's hungry in our world, you know, and they're hungry for something. Some people are hungry for ascension. Some people are hungry for enlightenment. Some people are hungry for a planet that is in harmony without war. Some people are hungry for true love. Some people are hungry for money or, you know, the nice house, the nice car, whatever. Everybody has some sort of physical, emotional, mental or spiritual hungers. And what I'd like to see in the world is that we're given the holistic education that is available to us all so that we can satisfy our hungers. So I've been interested in the last 30, 40 years in looking for a source of nourishment that's free, available to everyone, goes beyond race, religion, cultures and those sorts of belief realities, and can satisfy everybody's hunger. And I believe it to be the field of science based in the field of love, which is cosmic particles or qi or that stream of never-ending divine mother love. The more we release that through our system on an internal level, radiate out into the world, the sooner we all find everything we're looking for, no longer get hungry, and the planet becomes very, very peaceful because we become peaceful.
That's right. And it really does need to begin with each of us creating peace in our own lives, isn't it?
Yeah, always. I mean, I found out very early when I was young and looking on the political levels that if you want to change the world, you have to change each individual because the masses are made up of individuals and everybody agrees on that these days. And then the point is, well, how do we satisfy all our hungers in a way that does create harmony in the world instead of discord?
You know, you mentioned there are a lot of different hungers in the world, and lately the hunger for lust, greed, and lower sort of chakra stuff, I guess we could call it, has really been running rampant and taking over the consciousness of a lot of people on the planet. How easy or how difficult do you think it's going to be to actually turn that tide and help lift people up a little bit?
Well, I think the tide has turned, and I think it's turning very powerfully. I mean, you know, I call it a process of squishing. In other words, the fear, basically, I guess my theory is that people have been meditating for a long time and dreaming for a long time to live in a slightly different world, a more civilized world. Like, as long as we have children dying every second of hunger-related diseases, adults dying every 4 seconds unnecessarily from disease, while that's happening, we can't say that this is a civilized planet. And a lot of people recognize that true civility is when a planet has at least taken care of all basic human rights. So there have been people meditating for many, many decades, a long, long period of time, dreaming of a new world, dreaming of a more civilized reality for humanity, a different evolutionary path. And those dreams, I believe, have created a parallel world where that paradisical state actually already exists. And because of that parallel world is strong and in existence, the desire in our heart and our understanding that you've got to marry heart and intelligence together is drawing these worlds together, the world we live in here in this third, fourth dimensional realm and a higher realm where this possibility has come into being. And when the worlds merge on this way because of our collective desire, we get this process of squishing where there's a lot of noise from the darker levels, from the less enlightened levels, you know, where the light shines more brightly, then it makes other things, the darkness seem to be darker somehow. And there's a lot of noise, and I just think this process of squishing is a very good thing because it's a sign that the world's emerging. You know, when something knows it's going to become extinct, it makes a lot of noise. And this lower level worlds of greed and violence and poverty and war and all this stuff that we're turning our back on and saying, no, we don't want to create this anymore. It's not, you know, food for our souls, food for our future, food for our children. As more and more people turn away from those realities, then those worlds get squished and make more noise. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's a good sign.
Tell me about the research that you've done into pranic nourishment. I believe you've been studying this since the 70s.
Yeah, not probably lifetime, but, you know, not that consciously. I often say to people, you know, if I had have known what I was going to do this lifetime, first I would have become a medical doctor and then I would have become a priest, you know, it would have made my life so much easier. But, you know, I just discovered in the early 70s the food that meditation brings. And it's not just meditation, it's like what happens when you really remember the divinity that you are, when you really allow the divine one who gives you the gift of life to really love you and reveal all its gifts and all its glories. I mean, I remember, you know, going to church when I was a kid, and the priest would say that Jesus said, everything I've done you can do and more, and you only have to ask and you'll receive. And these were things I put into practice quite young. And when you do ask to experience the divinity you are, then it reveals itself to you. And one of its attributes, apart from its ability to guide us and love us and heal through Reiki, pranic healing and things like that, is it actually has the ability to nourish us on physical, emotional, mental and spiritual levels so we lose all our hungers. And this physical nourishment aspect is something the yogis have been doing for thousands of years, but it's relatively new in the West, except for the noise that I've been making about it in the world.
Well, let's get your definition of prana.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, my favorite definition is it's pure divine love. That's all it is, you know, but it's very unscientific. So, I can go into the science of it all that I've discovered in the last decade of my research. But they call it cosmic particles or chi or orgone energy, you could say, the universal life force, what people access when they're working with that Reiki energy. There's many, many names for it, millions of references when you go online on the web. But prana, basically, I feel it's a violet light energy. It's made up of three frequencies, which is divine love, divine wisdom, and divine power. And when these three, the flow of these three are really increased through the field, or when you can allow more chi to flow more smoothly through your system, then it starts to activate all sorts of abilities that are quite natural in a human being that don't seem so natural when we're blocking that chi flow.
Yeah.
That's all. So prana just has this amazing ability as this pure essence of love, which is a cosmic glue that binds all molecules and life together. And it has the most amazing gifts when we stop and take the time to seek to understand what the gifts are and ask to receive all the gifts.
Now, I have a background in teaching yoga, and so prana has been a big part of my studying and what I teach. And with yoga, we help introduce larger amounts of pranic energy into the body, usually through breathing exercises. But I know that you can take prana in through your eyes, through sunlight. What other ways are there to introduce prana into the body systems?
Well, Chalcock Sui, who does pranic healing, and he's quite well known in the networks, he talks about the prana that comes on this plane. For example, you can go hug a tree, and that tree will transmit a lot of prana into your system. It's quite energizing. My breakfast, for example, is a walk on the beach in the Queensland beaches, and the pranic energy is just humongous there. You know, you just walk and the wind blows it all away, everything away around you, clears the webs around you, clears the fields, feeds you, nourishes you, energizes you. People who've often been sick have been sent to the sea to rejuvenate, you know, the seaside, yes, to get some fresh air. You can walk through the mountains and feel the energy of prana there, the rainforest, the natural prana. You can walk with bare feet on the beach. I walk backwards every day on the beach because it stimulates the brain to behave in a different way. And barefoot backwards beach walking allows you to absorb a lot of the earth prana as well. As you said, you can get it through the eyes, through the sunlight, as per Hero Ratan Manick's research from solar gazing.
Yes.
So there's on that level, on this physical dimension, but then how do you access an increase of prana if you're living in a busy, noisy, smelly, polluted city? You know, it's easy when you're in the natural environment, but there's a lot less of it. It's a lot less obvious in the city environment. So my field of research has been setting up access to the pranic flow interdimensionally on the inner planes through the cellular structure. So I don't take prana, or I'm not dependent on prana from any external sources. I use I guess you could say different Kriya yoga practices, breathing techniques, but mainly just mind and intention, but also what I call personal calibration, because it's a system of magnetics. Like every human being is a system of energy that sends out signals that attract like frequencies that contract back to the source from which they came. And that signal system you're sending out is dependent on your thoughts, words, actions, and generally your lifestyle. So you can alter your personal calibration and hence the level of pranic particles, cosmic particles that you're attracting quite easily just by how you spend your time. So that's been my field of research. Just like science says, for example, every atom is a door to an inner universe, and when those doors are open and you can direct the energy flow through the body inside, through the meridian system, light body, and then through the atoms into the inner universes, you can attract a lot of prana or cosmic particles from the interdimensional realms.
And so ultimately, one can then, ideally, live purely from the nourishment gained through prana.
Yeah, well, I do. I mean, my diet over the last 13 years has been absolutely disgusting. I've lived on cappuccinos and the odd bit of chocolate and prana. You know, and most people, food purists, are horrified. They go, you know, if this was absolutely true, why on earth would you take any coffee and or cappuccinos? And it's like, well, come on, I'm a person, I socialise. I meet my girlfriends at the coffee shop at the beach, and we sit and watch the sunset and the dolphins, you know, playing in the bay and you know, communicate with each other. And I like the social agenda of doing that. And I'm not ready to stop the drinking reality, even though, and most people aren't ready to do that. Most people that I know out of, you know, 20-odd, 30,000 people in this world who are living purely on prana, getting all their vitamins and minerals from prana now, still partake socially of fluid because it is a social way of relating.
Well,
but yes, you could, and you imagine the environmental impact on our planet if people maybe had one meal once a month or just a cup of coffee once a week or every couple of days and nothing else.
Well, there'd be a whole lot of impacts, I think positive and negative, you know, if that happened. And we'll get into that a little bit later on. But one thing I wanted to touch on briefly, and I do want to get into this again later on too, is that you must need to have so much self-discipline to be able to live in 3D and be social. And,
yeah,
you know...
It is. Look, it just depends on your psyche, really. I was the sort of person growing up where food for me was fuel. Even though I'm European, came from a European background where food, I mean, in Europe, everybody has, and in a lot of countries, people have huge social realities around food. You know, if you're dating somebody, it's let's go out for dinner, darling. If it's a birth or a wedding or even a death, there's always food around. So there's a huge social reality set up in relationships that is based on food. food, and a lot of people's eating habits are emotionally driven. But for me in my life, I always saw it more as fuel because I started experimenting very young. I mean, I knew if I had red cordial, fizzy drinks, lemonade, my body would act differently to if I had apple juice, for example, or if I ate junk food, I would feel different compared to when I had pure food, mainly raw food. I realized the difference quite young that when I was exercising a lot and running field and track and doing athletics and swimming, that my whole system felt completely energized and different to when I didn't do any exercise. When I started meditating, I realized that when I meditate, I felt completely different to when I didn't meditate. When I did yoga, I felt different to when I didn't do yoga. And so after a while, an intelligent human being chooses the feel-good options. So it's not that difficult to set up a lifestyle that really works for you. So it does take discipline, but if it's your natural inclination to want to live healthy and happily, then you do tend to do the things that are good for you. Like if you feel you're a better person when you meditate, you tend to meditate, you know.
Yes.
These sorts of things, it's not that difficult. So it's not discipline so much, because discipline maybe is something when the rewards aren't too high, but it never feels like discipline when the rewards are so obvious. It just becomes lifestyle.
Can I ask how long it has been since you ate anything?
Oh, God, I can't remember. You know, I don't focus on that sort of stuff. And most of the people these days that I'm involved with, we get very, very relaxed about it because, you know, I spent 2 years of not eating anything at all, and 2 years was how long it took to me to really prove that something else was nourishing me. In that period of time, my weight became stable, my energy levels went very, very high, I found my sleep requirements virtually halved, my levels of creativity went through the roof, all sorts of wonderful positive events. And once you've proven it to yourself, you either make a decision then of, okay, well, I'll go to the next level and I'll not eat anything ever and I'll not drink anything. And there's one person I've met in the world who's done that. She's completely moved her consciousness beyond the idea or the reality of food and drink and never does either, never even thinks about it. Or they set into a middle ground like I've done, where we go, okay, all my vitamins, minerals, everything I need to keep me fit, strong and healthy come from prana, and now and then I'll have a cappuccino with my girlfriends because it's fun, or I'll have a piece of chocolate, or, you know, whatever people's proclivities are, because mm-hmm. it tastes good.
Yes.
I mean, I don't even eat chocolate anymore, you know. I let go of that after about the first 7 years. So these days, if I want a mouthful of flavour, I'll have a mouthful of flavour, but it's definitely from not where my nourishment comes.
Yeah. I'm sure you can imagine there are a lot of people who are listening to this interview right now who are saying, the first 7 years.
I did a lot of the first part of my journey with discipline, and that was moving into the pure prana as nourishment reality.
Yes.
I mean, I'd spent over 20 years meditating and, more as a vegetarian and exercising, doing yoga and living quite a disciplined life because it allowed me to cope with life. I mean, I was a single mother at the time, and my life just functioned a hell of a lot better when I did these things. I couldn't afford to get sick because if I didn't go out to work, there'd be no money to pay the bills to take care of the kids. So I just chose a very disciplined, healthy lifestyle, which actually put me in the frequency to attract a lot of this cosmic particles, because one of the most powerful attracting forces for prana is service. Is serving with a pure heart,
yes,
without personal agenda. And it just puts you in the channel of kindness and compassion. And a lot of single mothers just naturally click into that because you become very, very selfless in who you are and what you're about, especially when you're the one who's looking after these children.
That's
right. So a lot of these things just happen naturally. So the second part of my journey, which is moving into a non-drinking state, which is in my agenda eventually, I'm doing just very gradually with joy, without discipline, just allowing it to happen naturally, with my inner being just pulling me into that state without the discipline, you could say. So I'm doing two parts in my journey, the first with a bit more discipline and the second with just allowing things to unfold naturally. And it actually just took me 7 years to lose my interest in chocolate. You know.
It'll take me a whole lot longer than that, I think.
Yeah, but when you do it just naturally, it does, things do fall away, because the physical body, when you start living on prana, it absolutely loves it. It really, really gets it, because it's pre-programmed in our cellular structure. We have memory of when we were beings of great love, great light, telepathic, and we never took from this physical plane as far as food. We worked on different levels for all our nourishment before we became as dense as we are. So the physical body holds all these memories because we're part of the web of life, and we have this understanding in us. We are all one. So the physical body is easy to please, but the emotional body, it has all these hooks and dependencies in food, to food, for pleasure that are completely independent of the physical system.
Yes.
And I think when you go into denial of something, things become hidden rather than naturally letting them go in your own time without being in denial. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so that's why it took me 7 years to let go of chocolate.
Now, I would like to clarify something for the listeners as well, because there may be some confusion out there between what you do and what you're a proponent of, which is pranic nutrition and breatharianism.
Yeah.
Would you please tell us what the difference is?
Well, firstly, look, I'm not a proponent of that at all, of any of it, really. It's just that, personally, I happen to click into a frequency field where I attract enough cosmic particles so that I'm free from the need to take physical food. Like, if there's no physical food on the planet, I wouldn't die, because I don't need it. It doesn't mean I don't partake in flavor from time to time. Now, a true breatharian is a breather of God. That's what the name is. Breatharian is a breather of God. Now, everybody then is a breather of God, and everybody then is a breatharian, because we're all alive, because this energy of this divinely intelligent, supremely loving consciousness has willed us into existence and breathes through us and gives us life through, you know, the mix of the elements and our molecular structure and the way it functions. So we're all breatharians. However, in another level, a breatharian is someone who never eats and never drinks. They're free from that need, because that energy of the breath of life, of the love of the divine, is flowing so strongly through them, they're free from those physical needs. So I'm not a true breatharian, because I've never gone for long, long periods of time without drinking, even though I have gone for periods of time without drinking, but not for years or years.
Well,
whereas
I can imagine
some people have done that, you know.
Well, so yes, people who've achieved a very high level of self-mastery,
yeah.
I imagine. Actually, there's one from history that I know of, Giri Bala, who was an eating saint.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's actually documented in Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. So if anyone out there would like to look that up, you can find her photo in the book and a description about what she does. And she says that she recharged her body with cosmic energy from the ether, sun and air.
Yeah, and also Therese Newman. I mean, there's been people in the West that have been documented for a long period, you know, for hundreds of years and back, as I said, thousands of years in the yogis. But I see this, like, my interest is not really in turning the world onto pranic nourishment, what I call, you know, not, because I prefer to call it pranic nourishment than being a breatharian, because I'm not a breatharian, but I am someone who is nourished from prana.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to bring in different terminology into the Western world that is more applicable to the Western models of reality. My interest really is just in nourishing people on the deepest levels of their being, you know. I mean, I remember I started meditating. I met up with yogis and mahatmas from India when I was very, very young, because I had that desire to really know who I was on all levels. And Socrates says, man, know thyself. And I always had a feeling I was more than just my mind, my body, my emotions. And when you have that feeling, you ask to know who you really are. That's really the beginning step of this journey, because when you ask, you can receive. So I met up with these yogis and gurus very early and learned a lot of the Eastern philosophies and Eastern ways. And the living on pranic, even though I'd heard about that, that wasn't something I desired. What I desired was to really know who I was and to have all my hungers disappear, because I always felt hungry, not physically hungry, but I always felt that there was more. And, you know, the very first day I sat down to meditate, I had an experience of so much light flowing through my body and so much love, just wave after wave after wave of the most incredible love. And it was like every cell in my body just sighed and relaxed and went, ah, that's who I am. And I became completely addicted to that experience of love. And I realized that was the food I was looking for. And I can guarantee that when any human being steps fully into the field of love, that is the essence of the being that they are, beyond all the personality and all the other stuff, only then will they find that every single one of their hungers on the deepest level disappear. And when all of our hungers disappear, we come into the most profound state of love, of joy, of peace, of fulfillment, of contentment, of happiness, that all the other stuff we manifest in the world will just also disappear. You know, as far as stuff that we manifest, it's not for the highest good of all.
Yes. You're listening to an interview with Jaz Muheen on Otherwear on bbsradio.com. I'm Liz Miller, and when we return, we're going to get into our multidimensional anatomy and explore the process of what happens in one's physiology once one begins to live on light.
On light.
You're listening to Otherwear on bbsradio.com. Jaz Muheen, let's talk about the science behind the work that you do, because we have been concentrating a little bit on the metaphysical aspect to the work. And I know that, well, I think it was in the 90s you actually began some serious projects into researching the scientific elements of the work that you're involved in.
Yeah. It was interesting, you know, because this is not something that, as I said, I sought to be public for. In fact, when I began my journey with this, with the not eating aspect of it, I found it made people very angry, actually. You know, people in my community and friends and even family were a bit concerned, even though they were used to me meditating for decades, etc. This was pushing it a bit too far. But, you know, I came to a point where I was very confronted on a multidimensional level by knowing that, you know, if I really had found a solution, if I really could do this, could I live with myself when every second a child was dying of hunger-related diseases, and could this possibly be a solution to world health, world hunger problems, and could I live with myself and not share this with the world? And it began, that put me into a space where I began a journey of trying to take it out of the metaphysical realm as much as I could, and this reality of, oh, it's all just love, 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 when you increase the love flow in your body, anything's possible, and took it more into a scientific level. And when I did go public with it, I found, you know, the people that came to see me in Europe, you know, I had Buddhists and Jews and Muslims and Christians and doctors and scientists and atheists and you name it, people from all walks coming. And I found that the only way I could work with this and not confuse their realities was to bring it into computer terms. So, you know, that's what I like to do with the science of this, is really keep it in terms of the body is a computer, our mind is like the software program, and our life is the printout of the two. And, you know, one of the first stepping stones with this reality is if we don't believe it's possible, then it's not. Because chi or prana, that flow of this life force, follows mind. So if you're going to stay in a state of limited programming and limited thinking as a biocomputer, then this is not a reality you can move into at all. But when you do move into this reality, it's not that difficult. The ability to live on prana is simply to do with magnetic attraction. What depth of flow, what strength of flow of cosmic particles that you can attract to your energy field, and that is also a result of where your brainwave patterns are anchored. If somebody's brainwave patterns are measured to be constantly in the beta frequency field, which is what I call busy, busy, busy beta, then this sort of reality is impossible, because you're just not in that field of attracting enough cosmic particles to you. And in the beta frequency field, everything nutritionists and doctors and scientists say about the human system needing nutrition is absolutely true. We do need nutrition. But when you move your body through the alpha, theta, delta frequency spectrums and the brainwave patterns into these, then your body starts to access nutrition on a different level, on an interdimensional level, on a cosmic particle level, beyond the physical nutritional aspects of food. So the science is very simple. Change the energy signals you're transmitting into the field so the universe responds differently and you increase your chi flow, and keep your brainwave patterns anchored not just in alpha, which happens in meditation, but keep it in the theta levels and spend as much time in the delta frequency field as you can. And then all of this just shifts your energy field, your calibration, so that the chi flows differently within you. Add a mindset where this reality is possible. Change the programming. Ditch limiting thinking. Ditch toxic thinking, ditch toxic feeling, ditch toxic feeding patterns, and voila, you're there. Might just take you a few lifetimes or whatever.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I do wanted to broach the subject of our body's digestive system and what happens to one's physiology once they start to rely more on pranic nourishment than nourishment from food.
Well, people often ask that. They say, you know, why have we got a digestive system if we're not meant to take physical food? And again, I see the body, I guess you could see the physical system to me is like a kindergarten kid, okay? All it's interested is in survival, sex, food, where am I going to live, all that sort of stuff. You know, basic survival issues, that's physical system drive. Then you have the emotional body system, which is slightly different again, and it's kind of like a primary school kid, you know, or maybe it's more like a teenager, you know. It's a bit willful and it wants to experience all the different experiences, the ranges, depths of emotions, falling in love, whatever. It likes all that. Then you have the university graduate, which is the mental body, or it's like the general in the army, but it's like a university grad who thinks it knows everything, etc. And the mental body likes to be the boss of the system, the mind, the ego, whatever. And then you have the real boss of the system, which I call the inner king or the inner queen, which is the divine one within us, the one that loves us enough to give us the gift of life. Most people take orders from either the kindergarten kid or the high school kid or the university grad, and they never really understand the potential of the king and queen or recognize it. So you really need to change the chain of command inside your system. So it doesn't really answer your question, but it's what's coming through. So the question was, you know, who's the boss of your system, you know? Yeah. Who are you allowing to run the system? Yes, this king queen has the ability to feed us, but we don't believe that. So the body, as the kindergarten kid, just does whatever the university graduate is telling it or the high school student is telling it to do. So while we think we need physical food, we do. And therefore the physical system says, all right, master, you believe you need to take your nourishment from the physical realms. I will, through evolution, create a digestive system to deal with this, even though you have within you the software programming to bypass this altogether. You don't actually have to take physical food, but if you believe you do, you do. For example, Rudolf Steiner did some research many eons ago, or however long ago, where he was focused on the physiology of the system. And he said that when a person takes physical food, the physical body doesn't actually do anything other than it scans the components and the elements of that food and says, okay, master, you're giving me chocolate. It's got blah, 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 blah in it. I will create that for you and disperse it through your system and get rid of this that you've put into my body. So it doesn't actually do anything with the food but scan it like a computer and then create that which you've given it. Therefore, if you don't give it a balanced diet, then you've got an incomplete game happening. But if it doesn't actually take the physical food, it just scans it and produces the mirror of what's in it, then why can't you bypass the food and simply say to the body, okay, body, you're clever, I'm the boss, I'm the master, I'm the king and queen, I want you to now to open yourself up on all levels to get all the vitamins, all the minerals, everything you need to keep yourself fit, strong, healthy, self-regenerating, self-rejuvenating from the pranic force, which is in every cell, every atom, and feed me from that.
Yeah.
And the body goes, okay, master. So the digestive system has just been created because the body is serving the master's belief systems. But the question is, who is the master of the system, the high school kid, the university grad, or the king and the queen? So when the king and the queen steps in and says, okay, as the divine being I am, I'm going to be nourished in a different way, then the digestive system is like a car that you park in the garage. It sits there, doesn't do anything until it's used, like a car. Car doesn't break down because it's in the garage. It just sits there till you're ready to use it. Now, if you then decide I'm going to be a true breatharian, my calibration is right, I've tested that through the testing methods that we have available to us now, because this can be done completely safely with many different methodologies, and you're ready to be a true breatharian, to not eat, to not drink, then, and the body knows that and you're completely locked into that, then I think in the evolutionary process your whole system will change, the physiology will change, the digestive system will be eliminated over time, and you'll have a different prototype of human being.
Yeah. So tell me, what's happened to your digestive system? I mean, we all know about how when you don't eat for a couple of days, your stomach shrinks.
Yeah.
What's been going on inside your body?
Well, I decided that you can be, what could you say, you can be, what's the word, rigid, too rigid.
Mm-hmm.
You can be rigidly into, oh no, I've got to eat, or rigidly into, oh no, I never eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that true mastery is to be able to switch anything on and off at will without any detrimental effect on any level.
Yes, I would agree with that.
that was my, that's been my reality. So once I'd mastered the ability to not need to take any physical food at all and maintain health and energy levels and all that, I then decided that I wanted to have things now and then for flavor, like a piece of chocolate in the early days, as I said. But you can't go taking a piece of chocolate if you haven't eaten a couple of years without transmuting that into a frequency the body can handle, because the very substance of chocolate is like chemical warfare. It's like a bomb, introducing a bomb into the system. One, the body doesn't want it. Two, it doesn't need it. And it goes, man, what are you giving me this for, you know?
Okay, so tell me about the transmutation.
Yeah, you've got to go through the process of transmutation. Well, because I work on a computer level, I feel like you can rewrite software program regarding how energy runs in your body, but you can use what I call violet light grids. Like the Taoist masters of the Taoist lineage say that violet light is the most powerful light we have at our disposal, because it responds to programming. In other words, as that violet light flows, and violet light is made of the frequencies of divine love, divine power, divine wisdom, as that violet light grid flows through you, or as you create new grids within your system, independent of the light body and the meridian system, then you can put a digestive grid through the whole system, from the mouth, esophagus, stomach, intestines, to the eliminationary organs. You can create that working with ancient symbols and grid systems based on violet light, and program that everything you eat and drink, no matter what it is transmuted instantly into light and the perfect frequency that is good for your body. That's one level of transmutation. Mm-hmm. Another is where people rub their hands together, create a chi field, and channel light energy into the food and say a prayer of grace and thanks. That changes the frequency. But I'm lazy. I don't want to have to do that every time I decide to have a cappuccino or anything like that. I just like to think that I've got a permanent grid system running in my body that does this for me, that's been programmed and is active. And again, through kinesiology testing, you can test your body before and after the creation of the grid to see if it's working. And it's amazing how many people we've taught around the world, particularly initially in Europe, where people love their coffee and chocolate, how to transmute coffee and chocolate. And they love it. And the body confirms it straight away once the grid's active.
Brilliant. Now let's get into the discussion of biofields, because the understanding of one's biofield seems crucial to what you're teaching. Firstly, is a biofield, and what kinds of biofields exist according to your research?
Okay. Well, it's a good question, because I don't see myself as a spiritual teacher, and I'm not interested in religion. What I'm interested in is energy fields. How can we change the flow of energy within us and around us so that we as a human being are in complete harmony on all levels, and so that our presence in this world feeds the world and harmonizes the world? That's my interest. I'm not interested in all the other stuff. You know, people have their own fields of expertise around that. So in that field of study, I've made it quite simple in that we have basically five energy fields or biofields we're working with. Firstly is our personal biofield. What type of energies are transmitting through us? Quick example, you get a person who sits around spending a lot of time drinking beer, alcohol. I'm not in judgment of this, I'm just talking about energy fields. So they drink a lot, they eat a lot of junk food, they watch a lot of TV, they hate their job, they yell at their wife and kids, they, you know, not nice to anybody. They will have a certain frequency transmitting out of their system to which the universal field will react, because the universe simply mirrors everybody's own state of consciousness back to them. Then you have another person, again, no judgment, and they spend their time doing a lot of meditation, yoga, eating organic food, light food, good food. They're kind, they're compassionate, they do service, they've manifested work that they love. You know, they're abundant in all sorts of levels in their life because they've understood universal laws and how they operate. Well, they're going to be transmitting another level of signals, a completely different signals. So you'll have two completely separate fields and different fields of resonance and personal biofields. So our personal biofield we control simply by how we spend our time. Now, the radiation coming through us from our personal biofields then creates the community field, which makes up the different people in the community. So the dominant pulse of everybody, like if you've got a lot of people tuned to one frequency, then that becomes the dominant pulse to one reality.
Yep.
So then you have the community biofield and how the community is operating. Then you have the global biofield, how planet Earth is operating. What signals is planet Earth sending out into the universal field? Then you have the cosmological field where astrology and all the rest of it fits in, and the solar system and all of that, and where we're doing a lot of our space exploration. But then we have the field that I love and interests me, and that's the interdimensional biofield. Now, the interdimensional field is the field, the quantum field, the virtual reality field that Deepak Chopra talks about. This is the field that permeates all the other fields and gives substance and life and support to all the fields. Now, in that field, you'll have extraterrestrial intelligence, ascended masters, angels. It's a field of the Buddha calls the pure land or the cosmic Christed consciousness, the cosmic grid of pure divine love that is woven, that field of love, that web of love that's woven through and around our planet because we want it there, that is through us, through the light body, through the meridian. The interdimensional field is the one that gives our light body its life, that gives the meridian system the life that then gives molecular structure the ability to form and to create physical form. So I like the interdimensional field, and it's very fascinating because the secret to how you control all of it or how to maximize energy flow is, again, simply how you spend your time.
So how do you interact with all of these different fields that you've just discussed?
Well, firstly, one of the best commitments, there's a number of commitments you make in your evolutionary journey. Like, for example, I've noticed in the work that I do, there's three stages of people that people go through that I attract to me, the people that come to be with me. The first stage is where people have a sense that they are more than just their mind, body, and emotions, and they start to say, who am I? Maybe I'm something more than this. Maybe I am a spiritual being here to have a human experience. Maybe instead of creating chaos in my life, maybe I can learn how to create harmony in my own world, with my family, with my friends, in my life, to know really what love is, to know who I am, and also create harmony in the world. And that's a beginning stage. And in that stage, you're starting to move into more of listening to your intuition, your inner voice. You're starting to experience a little bit of grace, synchronicity, magic in your life, and you like it. And you go, "Ooh, I love that. That just came together so easy. I like more of that, please." The next stage is where you've been listening to your inner voice, and maybe your inner voice guided you to do meditation or yoga or read metaphysics or understand how universal laws run all the lower laws of science, and you know, maybe you've been doing a bit of research and reading, and you've had more experience, like real experience of this in your field. In this second stage, you've opened up to maybe the reality of, I don't know, yogic masters or angels or, you know, interdimensional beings. I don't know, but you've got a lot more grace. You're a lot healthier, you're a lot happier, life's working, listening to the intuition, you know, everything's getting better. Then the third stage is where you've actually really merged, you could say, with the divinity you are. You've understood you are the king and the queen. You've understood the laws that govern science, the higher laws. You've graduated. You're not in the realm of playing with holy ones and angels anymore. Because they're your colleagues, you know, they're just like good friends. And once you leave university, you don't take your professors with you. So you're not into the guides and all that sort of game anymore because you have stepped into your own field of mastery. And part of that is making the commitment, one, to be the best human being that you can be in a way that creates harmony through all the fields, and two, making the commitment of impeccability, you know, that you will conduct yourself in a way that is fully aware of the law of resonance, of an attraction, and of universal laws, and you'll take complete responsibility for all your actions. You'll own it. You'll understand that you are the master and you create your reality, and you know, it's a very interesting game. You also make the commitment and the understanding that whatever you focus on grows. So you look for the God in you, and you look for the God in everyone, and you look for the good in everything, and because you do so, you find it, because universal law says whatever you focus on becomes real for you. So the war on the chaos and the rubbish we see on the planet, we understand it's just kindergarten, high school stuff running around with people governed by their physical systems as their boss, or their emotional systems, or their, you know, university grad students as their boss, and they haven't really understood who really is the boss of the game yet. And when they do, everything shifts. And because more and more people do want the inner king, the inner queen, to be the boss, that they do want to manifest the divinity they are impeccably with honor and love and respect for all life, that movement is growing. So the status quo is shifting, and the 100th monkey game's kicking in, and the world's changing. So it's good, good, good.
Yes. Now, a lot of people who've been studying metaphysics consider the third dimension to be the dimension of illusion. And reality seems to be becoming more and more malleable as we approach the 2012 date.
Yeah.
And our bodies are, you know, part of this third dimension. They're vibrating bundles of consciousness, and they're all vibrating at different rates. Now, when you work with pranic energy on a consistent basis like yourself, what happens to the density of your own molecules?
Well, it's, you know, it's very interesting because, for a start, a lot of it can't be measured, although I was in Russia about a year ago with a woman who is the only true breatharian I know, a woman called Zenita Baranova, and she's a 70-year-old lady, and we're in a place called Krasnodar in Russia, and she'd been working with some alternate doctors, medical scientists, etc. there, who have wonderful machines now who can measure, it's sort of like Kirlian photography, but more sophisticated, so they can measure all the biofields of the body. So the problem with what we're doing is that we don't have machinery that's sophisticated enough to really measure it. You have to rely on your own inner senses and your own intuitive understanding. Like I could tell you that when you go into your body and scan your body and look to see how prana flows, you go into a molecule and it's like, or an atom, and it's like, or cell really, and it's like it's got all these little filaments and hairs in it. They're not hairs, but they're like filaments, and the prana flows through the cells, like a tunnel that wind is flowing through, and it vibrates them all, and they take all these invisible particles and just go yummy, 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 and just absorb it and eat it, like a wave that takes in gulps, like a whale that takes in big waves and gulps of water and then sieves all the plankton and then lets the water flow out again. It's kind of like that flow. And, you know, when you go, I could say that when you go outside and you look in the sun and you squint your eyes and you see millions of dots of lights, that's all prana dancing, but it's inside and it's outside and it's in you and around you, it's everywhere. So the physical system, you have a feeling that everything gets lighter and lighter and lighter. And I went through a period of where it just lightens up to the degree where you don't even feel like you have a physical body anymore, except you can see your shadow and hear your footsteps. But it's like all your inner fields are so open to the web of oneness that you yourself have disappeared to a large degree. You're just constantly in this field of grace and love, and everything, and you know, I could say everything you think is made manifest, which it is for everybody, but it's like, you think of someone and then they're there, or they call you or you bump into them, but it goes beyond that. It goes to the point of my favorite saying, and that is that you get to a point where the universe rolls in ecstasy at your feet. And what happens is you're in such a field of grace and love, because that's all you are and that's where you're anchored, that the universal field anticipates your need before you even know that you need it, because you don't really have needs, but you are existing on this planet in service, and so things need to be provided for you to make sure that the service has minimum effort for you and maximum impact in the world, which is what happens when you step into the flow of grace.
Yes.
So it's such an amazing experience, because if you're using normally, some researchers say 40 to 90%, they can't agree, of energy in the digestive process, and you don't need that anymore, then all that energy can go to higher activities, to develop your clairvoyance, your clairaudience, your clairsentient abilities. Your creativity just goes through the roof as far as you know, you might end up with 22, 23 hours a day to play with because you don't need much sleep. You got so much energy, nobody can keep up with you, and you've got to watch that because, you know, you expect more of others because you yourself can do a lot more, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Like I used to do an hour of yoga when I lived with food, and now that I don't have food, my body can do 3 hours, and you get stronger and fitter and healthier. You don't get weaker, because primer, for example, it has no food coloring, it has no insecticides, it has no pesticides, it's not genetically modified. It's the purest source of food that your body can access, so the body functions completely differently on all sorts of levels. It's really quite amazing.
I must say, you look so vibrant, you glow with health, you definitely don't look skinny and gaunt, and you're a real testament to what you teach and what you're, I mean, you're a living testament to, yeah, what your beliefs are. And I know that a lot of people, when they think of not eating for a long period of time, must think, oh my God, you must get so skinny and look like death on two legs. And
yes,
it's not like that at all, is it?
No, that's two separate discussions. So you have fasting and you have living on prana. It's completely different. Like when I first started working in Germany, for example, there was a huge backlash from the anorexic society saying, you know, how dare you promote this? Look at these skinny women. Well, there's a big difference. If you have anorexia, you have issues somewhere along the line with self-love, lack of self-love, whereas, you know, either on a physical, emotional, mental level, attention-seeking behavior, whatever has been happening in your physiology. But with living on prana, it comes as a result of great self-love. Now, not self-love out of ego, but understanding who the true self is, stepping into the field of love of the true self, merging with your higher self, becoming one with the God you are through the whole enlightenment ascension process. But, you know, to me, enlightenment, it's not a destination. It's a never-ending journey because you can always absorb and attract more light and more love and radiate that out into the world. So, you know, living on prana is very different to fasting the physical system. I eat, but I eat prana. I eat cosmic particles, so I get nourishment. It's not like I stop eating and don't get nourishment. If you stop eating and don't get nourishment and you go into fasting mode, then the body lives off its fat reserves, and you get thinner and thinner and weaker and weaker. So one of the tests of knowing if somebody is nourished by prana is, are you getting stronger or are you getting weaker? If you're sleeping more, you're not getting nourished enough. You should be sleeping less. Does your weight stabilize or do you get thinner and thinner? Are you living off body fat? Like, you can do a kinesiology test, a muscle test straight away, and ask yourself, what percentage am I currently being nourished by prana through my lifestyle right now? Is it more than 50%, yes or no? More than 60%, yes or no? If you're living a spiritual life and you're currently being nourished more than 50% now by the pranic flow as far as vitamins and minerals go, then you can immediately halve your meal consumption, your food intake, and immediately unhook your dependence from the world's food resources by 50%, because through the kinesiology process, which I actually don't like, I have other testing methods that I think are better, that everybody knows kinesiology, so we'll stick with that. But through the simple testing the body and talking to the body, the mind-body communication that Deepak Chopra talks about, your body can tell you exactly where you're at, like how much percentage of cosmic particles are you attracting to your body right now. If it's 50%, you can eat less. If it's, you know, less, then that's a difference. Like another thing to ask the body, because you're talking about radiance and looking good, what's your biological age? Like, if your lifestyle is working good for you, if your model of reality is good for you, if your mental reality and programming, those repetitive thoughts that you keep feeding yourself, are good for you, then you must have a biological age that's younger than your chronological. And you can test that immediately. The body will give you the answer. If you're not at least 10 years younger than your chronological age, then you need to do some adjustments in your lifestyle, because your lifestyle determines that. So it's having the courage to change your model of reality. So this looking good, looking radiant, is just simply a matter of your lifestyle's working for you or it's not.
Well, I can't wait to keep talking to you about all of this fascinating work that you're doing with Pranic Nourishment and the Prana Program. We're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, I would love to talk to you about some of the things that you do out there in the world, because I know that you travel quite a lot and take this work to many different places and try to show people what the benefits of pranic nourishment are. I'd also like to talk to you about how the work that you're doing impacts your personal life and your family and how they've reacted to all of this. You touched on it briefly earlier, but I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about that when we come back.
Wonderful.
So this is Otherwhere on bbsradio.com. You're listening to a conversation between Jaz Muheen and myself, and we'll be back in a minute.
Visioning outside the box, then you need Otherwhere. Perhaps with a little bit more, we can all reinvent the box together.
Downloading Otherwhere.
You're listening to Otherwhere on bbsradio.com, and we're back. Jaz Muheen, you're a mother of 8 children and now a grandmother.
Yeah.
And you've raised your family while researching pranic nourishment, and obviously you, well, not obviously, but I'm assuming that you would have had to feed your family as they were growing up with food. Tell me about what that, you know, how that was for you. Was it difficult? Was it a challenge? Have any of your children decided to follow in your footsteps?
The family life around this is very interesting, but when I kicked into this in the early 90s, my kids were pretty grown, so it's like I didn't have young ones anymore. And I had 2 biological children, just so the listeners out there can go, oh my God, she's had 8. No, I just picked up extras along the way. You know, I've adopted a couple of kids, and my second husband had 3, so I was involved with them for the last 20 years, etc. But the youngest at the time when I started living on Prana was already about 17.
Okay.
So it wasn't like they were babies. And my daughters, I brought them up to be very independent anyway. By the time that they were, you know, 6 and 7, they were in the kitchen cooking, because I just felt, well, we've all got hands, we can all help. And I used to employ them, you know. They'd be paid McDonald's wages to cook 2 nights a week, each of them. And then I'd do 2 nights a week, and 1 night was sort of takeout type stuff, you know, healthy takeout. And it was hard for them growing up, because they came into a space where I was already a vegetarian, I was already meditating, I was already burning incense and living this sort of, you know, yogini lifestyle. And now and then they'd complain, you know, because when kids are little, they want you to be like every other mother. They wanted me to wear floral dresses and be a nice big jolly mummy who worked at the tuck shop and did the normal things and had a, you know, nice husband and lived with a white picket fence and all that sort of stuff, which I didn't have. And, of course, when they'd complain, I'd just say, well, you chose me as a parent, which they hated that answer, because it's much nicer if it all happened, you know, by accident.
Yes.
But the fact is, we do choose our parents. I mean, Michael Newton, he's a clinical psychologist and hypnotherapist, and he wrote 2 beautiful books called Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls that talk all about, you know, our who we choose as parents and why, and setting up lives and life between lives and all that. So I won't even digress there. But it was interesting for my kids, because they had no choice. I just said, in my house I have a certain moral reality, and that is I will not spend $1 in the support of slaughter in this world. And that's it. So you're vegetarians. And they were fine with that. That's just how they grew up. As for living on prana, I feel that, you know, it is a very particular reality, and with everything in life, we need to be living examples, and sometimes we don't need to say anything, and it's good not to say anything and just let your presence be there. And so over the years, all my family have just noticed that, yes, Mum doesn't need to eat, she's healthy, she's strong, so they've changed their reality around food. If there's food, they eat it, they love it. If sometimes there's not, for whatever reasons, they're busy, they forget to eat, they just expect prana to bring them all their vitamins, minerals, nourishment to stay healthy, and they do. So all my family have come into a very relaxed space with it. My sisters and brothers and others in my family, not the direct ones, but associated family, they all say to me, look, you know, I just couldn't do what you do because I'm not prepared to live the lifestyle with such discipline.
No, it's a huge commitment.
But to me, it's not discipline, because the rewards are so humongous. Like, I remember being 16, listening to an Indian guru say, oh, yes, I could tell you all about an apple. And he went on to say, look, I could say that an apple is crunchy and juicy and sweet and delicious and it's amazing. But he said, all it is talk. You have no idea what I'm talking about until you take an apple and to bite into it, and then you know. And it's the same with people looking at my lifestyle, and they think it's a huge commitment, it's a huge discipline, but the rewards are so incredible. Like when you sit and meditate and you breathe the love breath, for example, that we'll do at the end of this program, and you feel that subtle, soft energy of that field of love, which is your essence, starting to rise and just pulse within you and just flood you with its, there's no words. And you just, it's just like, man, that's the only thing you ever want. That's your food. And, you know, I don't get off on that because I lacked love in my life. I had the most amazingly loving, supportive, emotional upbringing with incredibly loving parents who and a good family structure, which gave me, I guess, the freedom to look at global issues and grander issues from a very young age. But, you know, until you actually start to experience the benefits of a constant flow of grace and magic and ease and joy and all of that stuff in your life, when you do experience that, the little way, the lifestyle disciplines or whatever that you live are just, you know, they're inconsequential because the rewards are so huge. And if your family and if people around you haven't bothered to take the time to go through that journey to experience these rewards, then they're never going to get it until they do. All they will do is witness you getting younger and more radiant and more happy and more abundant and more joyous and more magic and all that in your life and go, wow, you're lucky. It's not actually, it's not like honey, it's just how I choose to spend my time.
Yes.
And then how the universal field interacts with me as I step into the master I am in a way that's harmonious with this world.
Mm.
Because as soon as a human being makes the commitment to be the best human being that they can be in a way that creates harmony in the world, then all the rivers of grace and the universal forces of great love and intelligence rally around you to support that into manifestation, because it's positive and beneficial to human evolution.
Yeah. So have your children or any of your children decided to follow in your footsteps and take this up as a commitment in their lives?
No, I don't think that they will for some time. I think they will in the future as their life changes. My oldest daughter is doing the breeding game now, and she's just had, well, she hasn't just had, I have a granddaughter with through her, who's about 2.5, and she's really just loving the whole mother game. You know, she was nearly 30 when she had her child and was really longing to be a mother and is just loving the whole family dynamic and you know, the most beautiful little crystal grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
She's part Aboriginal bloodline, so she carries all that wisdom with her, which
wow.
is a lovely genetic mix with our background. And then she's, you know, getting married soon and then planning another baby after that. So all of that's really wonderful. She's focused on that. My youngest daughter is in training to do yoga teaching and things like that at the moment. And the other ones, my oldest daughter from my husband's marriage, she's 40 and she's just had a baby after really hanging out, wanting to do the family thing, but a bit late in life. And the others are just still exploring their different places in the world and their journeys and, you know, and having the fun of all that and learning and growing and all that. So this seems to be my particular blueprint, and fits in fine with everyone. Everyone's happy with it all, but it's not something that calls any of them at this point. But who knows?
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't matter to me. I just want my family to be healthy and happy. I just want to have a fun, joyous, harmonious, respectful, loving time when we're together, and the rest is inconsequential.
Hmm. Now, let's talk about the work that you do out there in the world and what you do when you go travelling. You've been to Eastern Bloc countries.
Yeah.
You've travelled to America.
Yeah.
Where else have you been?
Not much in America, mainly Europe and Eastern Bloc, of course,
right.
And Eastern Bloc countries and Brazil and places like that.
And what do you do when you make your presentations there?
Well, firstly, I sing a little song to the angels. And I, because I like playing with angels, and I just ask the angels to bring all the perfect people who could benefit from being in my field and who I could benefit from having in my field, you know, so it's a mutually beneficial sharing and play. And I just open up to ask the divinity that we are in them and me to just allow what needs to come through energetically with words and in the sharings and the meditations to come through to take us all to the next highest, most perfect level with the intention that we are part of this web of harmony in the world and our presence harmonizes the world. And that people fulfill the blueprint that they've come to fulfill, you know, to really manifest the master they are. So therefore we always get a very beautiful, special mix of people who come, who are open, willing and ready to hear. Like 99% of people who come to be with me have been meditating for 5 years and then some, 20 years, 30 years, some of them. Nearly all of them have been long-term vegetarians. Most of them, about 70-80% have committed their life to service, to have their life make a positive difference in the world. So I'm dealing with a very select group of people. And we just get together and we just bring through as a group collective from the group divinity, which is, you know, one, and my divine one within is yours and everyone else's. There's no difference. And we just come from that space of sharing. We come from a space where we assume we're already completely enlightened. We are completely ascended. And now how are we going to manifest that together? You know? We don't come in and say, okay, now this is wrong with you, that's wrong with you. You've got to clear this. You've got to clear your shadow side. You've got to do blah, blah, blah. And then maybe you come into a more enlightened state.
Yeah.
We begin our gathering from the fact that we are already completely enlightened and pure and perfect because we are on that deep level. And then what do we need to do to really manifest that as individuals and as a group, you know?
Yeah.
But we have a lot of fun, you know. I feel like I've got the best job on the planet sometimes because I get to hang out with really beautiful, open, loving, like-minded people who have one agenda, which is to flood our planet with the radiance of the divine love that we are, so that people can be fed on the deepest levels of their being and really enjoy each other.
How many students do you think you've trained?
Oh, darling, I don't see the students. I just see it as people get, like-minded people gathering, you know? I mean, I'm no one's master, I'm no one's guru, and I'm definitely no one's teacher. But I do come in and discuss the energy fields and that sort of thing. So, look, I have no idea, you know? So I have books in 17 languages around the world. I've been traveling nonstop for 11 years. Some years I've been on the road 8 months of every year, traveling constantly every second night in a new city. You know, I don't keep track of physical numbers. What I am interested in is what I call an incorrupt network, an incorruptible network, which is an inner plane network. As soon as you start to bring it on the outer plane through the mental plane, it is subject to corruption. So my interest is not to create networks on this plane, but to inspire people to surrender to the divinity they are, to open up to their own intuitive guidance, their higher senses of knowing, allow the divine one inside to guide them, because once they do that, then their guidance in their life will be as perfect as it needs to be, because that's its true teacher. You know, we only have one guru in this world, and that is the guru inside us, the master, the king, the queen within us. And when we listen to it and its voice, and it speaks to us, as you know, through our intuition and our knowing, which is our sixth and seventh senses connected to the pituitary and pineal gland, when we really allow these glands to be activated and listen to its voice, then we come into the perfect state of being in harmony with all.
I'd like to ask you about your retreats, because I know that you've taken groups of people to various locations, Thailand being one of them.
Yeah, that's my favourite. We did the darkroom retreat.
Yes.
I love that.
Would you explain to the listeners what a darkroom retreat consists of?
Okay, now this is only for those people who are very, very extreme. I've just developed over the years a bit of a passion for the darkroom retreat, where we actually take people out of all light, all physical light, so you don't see any physical light, no light bulbs, no sunlight, no nothing, and we put them in a huge condominium complex in absolute darkness for 11 days and 11 nights, with no mobile phones, no television, no food. I don't feed them. They're on water, they're on prana. Some of them, if they have to, they're on juices. And we just spend 11 days and 11 nights together, where we do deep, deep meditation for hours at a time, guided meditations, silent meditations. Every night we get together, they lie on these mattresses, and they just listen to the most amazingly profound sacred spiritual music from all cultures. And it's like having the most divine symphony, because you just hear. You learn all about energy fields. Like, for example, you walk into a room, you can't see anything, but you can feel the energy field of a table that might be 10 feet away, but its energy field emanations are coming out from that table, extending. So you walk into a room and you can feel its space, its presence. Even not maybe 10 feet away, it feels like it's 3 feet away. You learn what it's like to be a blind person. Your brain, your pituitary and pineal glands start to operate differently, and the brain produces different MDMAs or 5-DMMAs or whatever. It's all in my Darkroom Downloads book on the CIA website that we have, and free book that they can download there. And the brain, like, acts differently, and after 3-4 days, there's so much light in your head. It's like you keep saying, turn it down, it's too bright in here, you know, even though there's no physical light. You just learn so much. You learn, when you take away the physical sense of vision, that you're not separate from anyone, that you're a point of consciousness, and you're just an energy field, and that everything has energy coming from it, animate and inanimate objects. You learn to navigate up downstairs completely in the dark. You learn your sense of direction. You learn to trust your intuitive voice as to how to find your room in the complex, how much shampoo to put in your hand if you're having a shower, because everything's in darkness. It's brilliant. So the real purpose of this is to put in place alternate feeding systems within the body, or to activate other alternate feeding systems in the body, and to check how they're operating by separating yourself from external prime, external light, and working on an atomic level with the inner universes. So that's just one way of we doing it. And the brain just functions completely differently. And people come out light and bright and happy and clear. And you walk into the sunshine for the first time. And it's like you've seen creation with eyes anew. And the flowers are brighter and the sky is bluer. And the birds are amazing. And everything is just so incredible. The rebirth, it's fun.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. It also sounds like it could be incredibly challenging if somebody in the group decided that they couldn't hack it.
Yeah, but then they could leave. I mean, we're free will beings. Nobody's bound there. You know, if you come in and it's too difficult. We had one person last time I did, and every day he wanted to leave, and every day he talked himself into staying, and in the end he didn't want to come out. Because he was having such a good time. I mean, some people confront fear of darkness, fear of loneliness, solitude, whatever. You know, Mantak Chia, we do it in Tao Gardens in Thailand, and Mantak Chia insists on feeding everyone because he said you take an Australian or an American and take away their television and mobile phones, etc. You can't also take away their food because it's too much for them. And most people come and he feeds them 3 meals a day, a lot of food. They sleep for a week and then the second week his teachings begin. And he goes into other levels of energy flow with chi. And he's amazed that we can bring in groups and do what he's always wanted to do, which is not feed them at all, you know, because it's very easy for his 40 staff and kitchen because we don't need much looking after. Mm. But it's amazing how quickly you can go so deep. But people who come, again, are intelligent, sensitive, sensible human beings who have prepared well for this. I mean, a lot of people who come into my programs have been raw foodists for a long time, or they've been on juice already. They're familiar with fasting. They've detoxed their system. They're aware of the power of the mind. They've been meditating for a long time. They're used to being alone. They understand the joy of being in silence and the secrets of silence and the secrets of solitude and the gifts that these things bring. So they're not people who are filled with toxicity on all sorts of levels and who are afraid of their own shadow or being in the dark.
Yes, we should really talk about the element of preparation, because this is a path of self-mastery, and it's not a path that is for all.
No, look, if there are people listening here out there, if you stop eating without preparation, you could very likely die. So obviously you have to be in the right field of resonance to do this. And for some people it does take lifetimes of preparation.
Yes.
You know, as I said, I was very prepared for well over 2 decades before I clicked into this.
Yes.
And that's what made it easy for me with doing it. Whereas with other people who don't have that preparation, then the journey becomes very, very stressful, challenging and difficult.
Mm.
And dangerous too.
Yes, very dangerous. And I think that can't be stressed enough because it's... Yeah, there needs to be a lot of consciousness in what you're doing if you want to embark on this path. Now, one of the books that you've written out of 24, I believe, is a book called Living on Light, which outlines a program that people may undergo if they choose to go down this path. But could you briefly tell the listeners what the steps would be in preparation for this?
Yeah, firstly, the book Living on Light, or is also called Pranic Nourishment, I don't recommend people do what's in there at all, okay? It was written 13 years ago in 1994, and it was based on a very particular spiritual initiation that just shifted me into the frequency field where this became easy. But what I realized that the initiation that's in that book will give you a gift. It may not necessarily give you the gift of living on prana. 3 people have died around that reality, around that process, because 7 out of 10 people ignore the guidelines in that book. So I don't believe that it's a safe journey if people are going to read this book and do it in their way and not follow the guidelines. Then they get into trouble and I get blamed. So I actually refuse to promote that book at all because I don't believe people follow the initiation steps responsibly enough, and I'm tired of being blamed for it. I wrote another book a few years after that called The Food of Gods, which is a much safer, slower process, and it's how a lot of Germans have converted into living purely on prana, and the Germans taught me a lot The Germans are an amazing group of people. They're very focused. They're very disciplined. They want to be kept up to date with the latest, and they're a bit faddy, I guess you could say, but very open to new realities and new ways of being. And many of them basically said, I don't like what's written in the Living on Light book. I like the concept, but not the initiation. It's too strict, it's too tough, can't we do it differently? And so they would set themselves a program. For example, they would say, in 5 years I will live purely on prana. Like, what's the rush? There's no time limit on this. Why do we have to make it happen quickly? We don't. And so they'd say, well, the first year I'll cut out all red meats, the second year I'll cut out all other meats, white meats and dairy products, the third year I'll go on to raw food, the fourth year I'll do mainly juice, 50 and more into just pure waters, liquids, etc. In the meantime, I'll work on my personal calibration, I'll meditate, do service, all the things I recommend in the Food of God's book, and I'll slowly transition into this with great joy and ease. Because if it is in my blueprint to do this, if I am part of this wave of new human evolution, then I will be divinely supported by the universal field on all levels. So it's going to come into being. What's the rush? So that's more of the program that I promote. So if people are interested, I really do recommend that they download the book, The Food of Gods, from the CIA website or the Self-Empowerment Academy website. It's easy to find me on the net.
Can
through
I ask
the
you,
website.
Sorry, but, can I quickly interrupt and say, what does CIA stand for?
I run the CIA, which is the Cosmic Internet Academy.
Okay,
which
just to avoid any confusion.
Yeah, well, I set up the CIA as the antithesis for America's CIA because I felt I wanted a website out there that gave good, positive information freely to the world that could transform our world into a unified, harmonious, loving space of one people on one planet. That's all. And it was sort of the opposite agenda of, overt, covert type operations, or covert particularly, operations of America's CIA. So we'd rebalance the energies. So we'd be free, they'd be secret, we'd let it all out, they'd keep it all in, whatever. It was just a little game I was playing when I actually set it up at that time. So the CIA website is just set up to do that, give a lot of free information. So to answer your question, what would people do to move into this attracting more chi or cosmic particles? There's an 8-step program that I recommend, very free. Briefly, it works like this. There's a magic in these things when you do them all together. And for some reason, every single person I've interviewed who lives successfully on prana only as a nourishment source, including myself, do these 8 things. First, meditate. Won't even begin to sing the praises of meditation, but it's basically sitting down, being still, shutting up, learning to feel, experience, listen to, and know the divinity that you are that breathes you and gives you life. That's part of what meditation does, really meditating on the higher aspect of your knowing and of your being and asking it to reveal itself to you. Second, prayer. The power of prayer is humongous. Go key it in online on the internet and find out all the positive research that's been done on the power of prayer. My favorite prayer is this one, which just goes, thank you, 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 thank you. When you say that, the universe says, oh my God, here's another one, stepped into their mastery, figured out universal laws, understood the rules of life, and have created a life that is so incredible. All they want to say in prayer is thank you, hallelujah, isn't that wonderful?
Oh, yeah.
So it's a good prayer.
Yeah.
So first one, meditate. Second one, prayer. Third one, programming. Be aware of the power of your mind and the mind-body connection, and that mind creates reality, and that wherever your mind is focused, chi will follow. If you focus on all the negativity in life and what's wrong with life, you will find it. If you focus on the God inside and on the God in every other human being, you will find it. And whatever you focus on grows. So understand the power of mind. If you don't believe prana can feed you, then it can't. If you do believe that this reality is possible, then you open the door up to that possibility being real for you. Let go of all limited thinking. One exercise, very simple. everything you see, you hear, you read within yourself, around you, from others, that you're told from gurus and people you respect, whatever, before you accept it into your life, ask yourself one thing. Does this reality, what I'm hearing, reading, whatever, does it allow me to be a limited being or a limitless being? If it creates limitation in your life, delete it. Don't accept it. Doesn't matter where it comes from. You know, you have the power of mastery and discernment. Don't take on board any more limited programming. We've been doing that for eons, and it's time to shift out of a limited reality into a limitless expression of the divine one we are. So meditation, prayer, programming. Next, wherever you're at, lighten up your diet. If you've been a vegetarian for a long time, go vegan. If you've been vegan for a long time, go raw. If you've been raw for a long time, go fruit. But with that, supplement it with the mental reality that all your vitamins, all your minerals, all your nourishment, everything you need to be fully healthy, strong, self-regenerating, comes from the divine love channel or from the pranic force and flow of cosmic particles. That's, you have to hold that if you're lightening up your diet. Fifth one. So meditation, prayer, programming, lighten up your diet. Next one, treat the body like a temple. Exercise it. Do yoga. Do qigong. Do tai chi. Do whatever makes you feel good. Cross train. Dance. Swim. Just get out there. Interact with the pranic field more. Make the body strong and treat it as if it is a temple that houses the most divinely incredible being, which is the God you are. Sixth one, so important, service. Every single day, do something for somebody else for no other reason than simply because you can. If you do that, then that puts you straight away into the interdimensional channels of great kindness and compassion, and whatever you are comes back to you, you know? The next one, time in silence in nature, number seven. Spend time in silence. Understand the gifts of silence. Spend time in nature, because nowhere will you understand and recognize the beauty of creation more profoundly than in nature. It makes us more environmentally conscious, and it makes us more loving towards Gaia and more respectful of this earth. So meditation, prayer, programming, lighten up your diet, exercise the system, service, time and silence in nature. And the last one, number eight, is so powerful because it aligns your emotional body to the heartbeat of the Divine Mother from which all love comes, and that is the listening to sacred music and devotional song. Nothing shifts you energetically, emotionally, more powerfully than pure devotional music sung with heart that you can sing along to and really allow to open up that heart center. So somehow there's magic in these eight things when you do them all together. Now, you can be doing the dishes that you've, you know, or cooking dinner for your family and doing the dishes and singing beautiful mantras. Switch off the telly and put on some devotional music, some bhajans, Deva Pramal's music, for example. There's so much incredible sacred music around, indigenous music, you know, whatever. Just find some music to listen to. You can be programming and listening to devotional music when you're driving the car through the traffic. You can be walking along the beach, exercising and programming and listening to music if you want to, and doing it all together. Make the 8 points part of your daily life. You can be under the shower in the morning, getting ready for work, and programming or singing or whatever. You know, you can do all of this. You can do yoga in the shower if you want to. There's so much you can do of these 8 things in your daily lifestyle instead of making it separate to your life and say, oh, I'm too busy to do all that. Make it part of your life as you do everything else.
Yeah, make it like it's breathing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just natural. Like, for example, you can stick the tongue on the top of the roof of your mouth with the intention that your tongue in that position stimulates your pituitary gland to produce more amrita, which is the fountain of youth. And when your tongue is in that position, you have 2 things happening. One, the pituitary gland does produce more amrita because you, the master, expect it to, which is why your tongue's in that position. So 2, it puts your brainwave patterns into alpha, so you're in a constant state of meditation. You get younger from doing this technique, and you give the gift an give the world an incredible gift, which is when your tongue is in that position, you can't talk. And then you're in constant meditation. You can do that when you're driving. You can do it when you're shopping. You can do it anywhere. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So
you make it your life. This whole game is part of your life.
Mm.
So it's not that difficult. So you ask the question a long time ago, because I tend to talk a bit when we get going, but you said, what can we do practically? Well, do those eight things. And the lifestyle tools, if you key in lifestyle tools on my website, you'll find them all freely listed there, but they're also outlined in the book, The Food of Gods. And also the book, Full Body Fitness, Biofields and Bliss, is a very simple book for people regarding lifestyle that changes calibration, that changes chi flow.
Yes. Now, there are many positive side effects to being able to live off cosmic particles.
Yeah.
But I would like to know, what have been for you the real, you know, ecstatic highs, or can you pick one that you've experienced through having done this that you would could share with the audience?
Oh, God, you know, I've had so many I wouldn't even know where to begin. You know, it's really interesting because people say, what are the greatest gifts that living on Prana have given you? And I don't think I can separate it from lifestyle. And I know a lot of people who practice the 8 points I've just shared also live in a field of great love and great grace and have created their own personal paradise, and they still like to eat a lot. So, because that's the benefits of that sort of lifestyle. You can lighten up your diet and still enjoy food without going purely onto Prana. And because that's my base lifestyle, it's very hard to separate it. You know, I don't know. They always say that you come to teach what you need to learn. And I always share my focus is on working with the energies of great love and great wisdom and the divine essence that we have inside of us. And I've just experienced so many gifts. And I think that just comes when you ask to seek and you ask to sincerely really know who you are. You know, I've had some disgusting experiences, like I was involved with 60 Minutes, who set up a challenge for me here, and their focus was purely to prove that I was a deluded human being. They did no research. They did all sorts of stuff that I won't even get into, but they know, you know, they know where they were coming from with that. And while it was very humiliating on some levels when it all went to air, it gave me the most incredible gift of humility. And that gift of humility then allowed me a few months later to have the most amazingly profound meditation where I found myself in the presence of the Christ. And I couldn't even begin to explain the experience that I had in that field of the most amazing love. But I couldn't have found that field without that humility that I was given from the experience of 60 Minutes. Do you know what I'm saying?
I absolutely do, and that's exactly why I asked the question, because I was hoping that there might be something like that that had happened, you know, especially when you can see the correlation between that really low point, or you can perceive it as a low point in your life where you had to have that experience of real humility through humiliation, that then transcended itself and became one of the high points of your experience.
You know, I did a documentary in Mount Shasta in California recently with this young girl, and she was doing a documentary for Kids of the World, and she said, beautiful, beautiful question at the end of the interview, she said, okay, now if you could go back in time and stand before yourself as a child, what would you tell yourself? I thought, what a cool question. And I thought, you know what I tell myself? I tell myself to chill. I tell myself just to relax and kick back and enjoy it, and that with every suffering that I would experience, of which I've had my share in this life, there would come the greatest gift, the greatest learning, the greatest understanding, the greatest insight. And so, you know, I think that's been part of this game for me, you know, because if you're living on Prana and you weren't public, the journey is very, very different. But I had in my blueprint, part of my service in this world is to be one of the main spokespeople for pranic nourishment in the West. And, you know, Schopenhauer, the philosopher, said when new information first comes to a field, first it is ridiculed, secondly it is violently opposed, and then thirdly everybody says, oh, I knew that, and it becomes self-evident. Well, if you're bringing new data out into the quantum field that's going to revolutionize the world, because let's be real, what's going to happen to our economic system? You know, the food industry, who needs a $1 billion food industry if we don't need food and we can learn how to nourish ourselves in a different way? What if we increase the love flow to such a degree in our body that we never get sick sick anymore? Why do we need the medical industry? Why do we need the pharmaceutical industry? If we can learn how to stop the aging process by having everything stay in a state of glorious suspended animation because there's so much love flowing through our bodies, we never age or die anymore, what happens to the billion-dollar cosmetic industry? All of this, like, this is revolutionary stuff. What if we don't really need food? What happens to the environment as far as waste disposal, sewage disposal, garbage disposal, the growing of crops? Every few minutes we lose an acre of the rainforest in Brazil to grow crops, to feed the cows, to kill the cows, to put them on the table. All that stops, so the rainforest and the earth becomes pure and pristine. No insecticides, no pesticides, because we're not growing crops anymore for food. You can see where how revolutionary this is if it's absolutely real. So you start bringing this out, information out into the world as a living example with thousands of others behind you, you're going to start pushing a few buttons. So the journey has been really, really tough on some levels, but only because part of me expected it to be tough, you know. And therefore, with the toughness, I've had the most amazing insights into human nature and support systems and truth and wisdom. Like when 60 Minutes did their thing, they put a question on the website to Australians, and they said, okay, Australians, who out there believe that it is possible to do what Jasmine is talking about for a period of 6 months? And a friend of mine rang me up and said, look at the results on the website. And that was the next day. And I went in and I thought, oh, maybe 5% would say yay. 72% of people said, yes, we believe her.
Oh, wow.
And then 60 Minutes came back the next day and said, well, it seems like if your name is Jasmine, you could fool some people all of the time.
Oh,
and
we
can't believe these results. And then they took the stats off the site because it was too disheartening for them and what they were wanting to do.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is you cannot fool people. People are working with the languages of light. And when they have good, solid, holistic education that's backed up with a real experience of the divinity they are, they know truth. And they know what they know, even though they don't quite know what it is that they know, because their inner being knows what's real for them. And you can't fool people anymore. So you've got to go beyond this intellectual reality of a good metaphysical model and be living this in such a deep level so that it's emanating out of every cell of your body, so that wherever you're walking through the fields, the universe is rolling in ecstasy at your feet. You know? That's the proof. You don't have to prove anything to anyone here. What you need to do is to come into a field of such grace that the grace supports you as, you know, as a, in recognition as to you being a being who is so anchored in the field of love and the field of truth, that there's so much love and magic and grace and synchronicity in your life, and that is all the proof that you need or anyone needs beyond all the other stuff. So grace, this constant flow of grace, has been a huge gift. Understanding how no matter how much you can be denigrated and reviled by people, or so much rumors or rubbish, you only have to look on the internet around my work to see that, and yet to still be around and be supported with so much love and so much grace on all sorts of levels, because this is a natural part of future human evolution of where we're going. It's just been amazing. I just couldn't even begin to describe it all. It's incredible.
Well, it's been an absolute joy to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, and you too, Liz, and to everyone out there, look, you know, all I would wish on anyone is that you really surrender to the divinity you are and ask it to reveal all its gifts, all its glory, and experience exactly what the God inside of you has to give to you, whether you call it God or your higher self or your monad or your I Am presence or your intuition or whatever, to seek to know it and feel its love, and, you know, that will revolutionize our world.
It sure will. And it's wonderful to be speaking with a living example of that. How may people find your work on the net?
Key and Jasmine. Look, I've got two websites. I've got jasmine.com, where I just say what I want to say, and then I have CIA, which is the Self-Empowerment Academy. And, you know, as I said, it's a website full of all sorts of things, including the books on the CIA educational aspect of that.
Yes.
We have the CIA training, so people can see where I'm holding retreats around the world, because I travel constantly, as you know.
Can you tell us, actually, when is the next retreat?
I'm doing something I've never done before, which is fun, because I grew up as an artist. I've been painting since I was 2 years old, and my passion is sacred art. So they can have a look on the jasmahin.com website to see a lot of the art I do. And I'm actually taking the alchemy of sacred art into the village of Assisi in Italy in October. It's the very next retreat I'm doing.
That sounds beautiful.
And we get together and we do sacred music and sacred dance and painting and walk the trails of St. Francis and St. Clair and meditate in the hermitage and do guided meditations. But unfortunately, the retreat, I think, is full. It's all booked out already. And then I go in and I travel around France and Vienna, and then I end up, I'm doing a month in Brazil. I'm going into the Amazons to work with the Amazons is in drought, the river, so they can't get the supply boats up to the Amazons to feed people.
Oh my God.
So we're going into the Amazons, into the jungles to, I do a lot of charity work. I do half my work charity and half paid around the world. So we'll do the trip up the Amazons to meet with all the villagers and teach them alternate nourishment. I mean, living in the Amazons is easy. And we'll just share all that research with them. And we're working in the slums in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro, for a while before we do that. Again, that's part of my charity project. So that's fun too. So, look, it's so much happening. Next year I go into Kazakhstan and the Ukraine and Lithuania and Estonia and back to St. Petersburg and Romania and all my, you know, those Eastern Bloc countries for fun.
Can you tell me quickly, what has been the most surprising place that you've had strong response from?
You know, that's really been surprising is the Eastern Bloc countries.
Mm.
And, like, I go to Romania and we'll have 800 people crammed into a little hall for 4 days, and they're all Christian. For example.
Wow.
So you've got to talk about it all in Christian terms, but they get it because they get the energy of love.
Yeah.
And I find what it's about is because they've been suppressed for so long, like they've been under communistic rule, they've had to go underground with their reality. So they're very thirsty for what's been happening in the metaphysical New Age scene out in the West. But more than that, they want simple techniques that work. And because I bring it back to the science of the fields, you know, we have very simple tools that work very powerfully and very obviously and very quickly. So these people have read all my books. There's about, I don't know, in Romania, about 10 books published now. They read the books, they apply all the tools, their life changes, they teach all their family, they teach all their friends, and then they bring everybody else the next time. So every year it just gets bigger and brighter and better, and people are happy and supportive and appreciative, and they just do it. Whereas I think in places like Germany and America and Australia, there's a glut of metaphysical information because all the secret societies and the indigenous and the ancient mystery schools are now revealing what they know because the time of secrecy is over.
Yes.
So people are being flooded with information and stuff, and they're not quite sure what's right for them until they start to work with their own discernment and learn, you know, to just take on board what is perfect for them. So I actually love working in the Eastern Bloc countries. Russia's fascinating, you know, Romania's amazing. A little bit of work I've been doing in India has been very rewarding. Brazil is beautiful. The people are so loving in the most incredible heart space. You know, you can stand there for 5 minutes in front of them and you're just breathing in the love and they just all melt and fall. You know, because they're nodding their heads all the time.
Yeah.
You know? Lovely.
Yeah.
Look, everywhere is incredible. If you just go into every energy field with an intention to see the God and the good in all, then everywhere is magic.
Wise words indeed. Well, Jasmahin, we're going to be taking a quick break, and then when we come back, I've invited you to guide us all into a beautiful meditation to conclude the show.
Yes.
Would you quickly explain what we're going to be doing?
Well, this is what I've been meditating on for the last 2 years. I call it the love breath, and it's a way of changing the way energy flows inside your body and nourishes you and changes what you radiate out into the world. So you can walk into an energy field and maybe people are in chaos or upset or angry or negative energies or whatever is happening, and by simply being in silence with your eyes open using this breath, you can transform the whole field around you and feed it.
That sounds great. So
yeah.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Jasmahin will be guiding us into that gorgeous visualization meditation, so come back very soon. Thank you. back. You're listening to Otherwhere on bbsradio.com, and we're just about to participate in a group exercise to help awaken our Otherwhere, and Jez Mahin is going to help us all do that. So what I'd like everybody to do is find somewhere quiet and comfortable and start to take a few easy breaths and allow your body to quieten down. And with that said, I'd like to hand over to Jez Mahin. Good night, everybody, and be well.
Thank you very much, Liz. Okay, this love breath meditation is very, very powerful, and I like to use it myself every day. It just, as I said before, it just shifts us into a field of a never-ending source of love, so we can radiate that out to feed the world and feed ourselves. So just sit yourself down very, very comfortably. As Liz said, just take a few deep breaths and put your tongue gently on the roof of your mouth. Put your hands in a mudra. For those of you who know what a mudra is, hand positions that stimulate energy flow in the body. Just imagine that as your tongue is resting gently on the roof of the mouth, it is sending energy up that pathway inside into the pituitary gland, the master gland of your body, that governs your telepathic abilities of receiving information from the universal field. And now as you focus your mind on your breathing, just keep your breathing rhythm deep and fine and connected. No pausing between your inhale and your exhale. With this breathing rhythm, we are matching the rhythm of the Divine One who breathes us. It never pauses in the way it breathes us. Its energy just flows through our body constantly in a very deep and fine, connected manner. Focus on the word fine. You are breathing so finely that if there was a candle flame in front of your nose as you exhaled, you're breathing that finely that that flame wouldn't even flicker. And as you keep this rhythm of deep, fine, connected breathing, you begin to think about that field of love, that original force of love. Perhaps you see it as the Divine Mother's heart, the Divine Mother's womb from which those rays of light carrying all the intelligence of creation came into being. The cosmic heart of pure love. Just breathing deep and fine and connected. Just imagining what this original force of supreme love means to you, however it presents itself. Imagine this supremely loving heart sending out a ray of pink light, a beam of love, and it moves through space, through time, through all the dimensions, into this space on the inner planes, and connects now like a cosmic cable into your heart chakra. It's as if you have now this beautiful cosmic cable carrying all the divine electricity of Supreme Mother Love through all the planes to your heart center, widening your connection to this field. And you imagine now as you inhale deeply, you are drawing this energy of pure love light through the door of your heart, your heart chakra, with the inhale. It's as if your heart has a nose and you are breathing through the doorway of your heart. Just inhale deeply of this never-ending stream of divine love. And on the exhale, you send this love out through your body with the intention to nourish every cell with this never-ending stream of divine love. Drawing of this stream of divine love that's flowing through the door of your heart chakra. And exhale, send it into the body through the cells to nourish you. Keeping your rhythm deep and fine and connected. Inhaling love through the inner plane door of your heart, exhaling it out to feed your body. And we add a mantra now of specific programming. This is a mantra of reclamation to reclaim the very purest essence of your nature. And the mantra is, on the inhale, you chant, I am. And on the exhale, you chant, love. As you use this mantra, I am love, again your mind is focused in your heart. Where your mind is focused, chi will flow. And you send all this loving ray of chi, of cosmic particles, on the out-breath into every cell of your body to feed it the love you are. I am. Just doing this in silence for a few moments with this intention and this chant. Of this never-ending stream of love that comes from the heart of all creation, allowing it to flow through the inner doors through the heart chakra, exhaling it through the body and then out through the auric field into the room around you. Letting it feed you letting it move out into the field around you to feed others with the chant, love. Body is responding. Breathe in so slowly, so deeply of this well of love. You open your eyes. Fix on one point in the room, and now as you inhale, you breathe in this stream of love through the door of your heart, and you draw it up to the eyes, flooding your physical eyes with this field of love. And as you exhale, allow the love to flow out, beam out through your eyes into the room around you. Breathing the energy of this ray of love through the heart up to your eyes, your physical eyes. Imagining as you flood your physical eyes with love, they are being adjusted for you to see the divine in all in this physical plane. And then using your eyes to transmit this flow of divine love out into the world. On the exhale, breathing deeply, I am love. Just practice this breath tool every day for a few moments, knowing that as you make the statement, I am love, you are reclaiming the Christic being within that you are, your Buddha nature. For the consciousness of the Christ and the Buddha and all the holy ones who have been before is just pure love. Namaste to you all.
Namaste from me, Liz. Thank you for joining us.